Hello, Internet, and welcome to Only Lovers Book Club. We are three Latinx besties who read romance, talk romance, walk romance, and any other move romance. This month was my turn, and I picked Just As You Are by Camille Kellogg. This is a light retelling of Pride and Prejudice, allegedly, but it comes with a representative twist because it's a very, very gay, very, very queer, very, very diverse book. So we're going to talk about it. We're going to see what we liked, what we didn't like. But first, we're going to start with talking about what we're wearing, what we're drinking, and if we have any interesting backgrounds. For those of you who are listening, sometimes we try to dress the part, add a little spice to the call. So let's start letting people know what we're drinking, looking, and wearing.
I am drinking a ginger infused lemonade that I made right before book club, not realizing that apparently I was supposed to make it hours ago because the ginger was supposed to like simmer for a certain amount of time and then just sit infusing for a certain amount of time. And then that mixed with the lemon part was supposed to like sit in the fridge for a certain amount of time. So none of that happened. But I mean, it still tastes like lemon and ginger. So I feel like, I don't know. Those numbers are maybe more of a suggestion. But that's what I'm drinking. I tried to style my hair into kind of like a faux mohawk-y kind of pompadour. I don't know what's going on, but it's just like, I don't know how to explain it. So if you can see the visuals, great. And if not, just I tried to do something with my hair that looked more gay than it already looked. I'm wearing these rainbow cloud earrings. So the little cloud is smiling and it's got rainbow colored little raindrops. And then my background is representative of the vibe that I wanted this book to have, which was the movie that we watched as a book club together, Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Those were the vibes I wanted, and I didn't get it. And it's okay. I mean, it was a contemporary, but that's what I want out of my queer Pride and Prejudice. And so that's my background.
I don't look half as good as either of you today. I am
in that Snapchat you sent walking outside with your bucket hat and your bag of chips. Like, I screenshotted it. I was like, this is so sexy.
I am in my queer summer attire, which is I'm in my overall shorts. I'm in my, like, it's like my athleisure. It's like a bra shirt, really. It's like a little crop top shirt thing or whatever from Old Navy. I did make an effort. I put on like my little rainbow bead, like a rainbow bead necklace. And yeah, I did go outside. I walked to the 7-Eleven to get like a gay drink. And so I wore my big red bucket hat. I took my picture with it. So, but I have big curly hair. And so it's hard to find bucket hats that like work. And I want to, you know, I want some shade. So I finally found one. Very excited. I think it looks great. I love how vibrantly red it is. I'm drinking a pink guava fruit juice from the 7-Eleven. I wasn't sure it was going to taste good, but it's got this cute little parrot slash, it looks like it's the lovebird, really. It's delicious. I really like it. It tastes like nectar. And I'm a little snacky. So I'm having my aubergine eggplant roasted garlic dip with some chips. And I'm just ready to have a gay old time.
I'm dressed like how the queer community dresses in New York, which is I'm wearing a crop top from American Eagle. I'm wearing legging, like lycra shorts, because the hat outside. I got my hair up. I got a scrunchie. I got my glasses on. I drew a quick cat eye, which I only do for special occasions, not just to like go to the office. I put on some glitter on my cheeks. Sometimes I'll pretend like I have little glitter teardrops falling down as like my little fun touch. And then I'm drinking, I live in Brooklyn, so I'm drinking a homemade seltzer with gin and lime and rhubarb bitters in it. And it's delicious.
Very on brand and very on theme.
We're going to give you guys a little info about the book we're talking about. So, Drea, if you could read our little book description, then Chris will do us the favor of reading a bit about the author afterwards.
Just As You Are. Equal parts witty and steamy, this debut rom-com brings a healthy dose of queerness and a whole lot of heart to a Pride and Prejudice-inspired enemies-to-lovers romance. The only thing worse than hating your boss, being attracted to her. Liz Baker and her three roommates work at the Netherfields, a queer magazine in New York that's on the verge of shutting down, until it's bought at the last minute by two wealthy lesbians. Liz knows she's lucky to still have a paycheck, but it's hard to feel grateful with minority investor Daria Fitzgerald slashing budgets, canceling bagel Fridays, and password protecting the color printer to prevent frivolous use. When Liz overhears Daria scoffing at her listicles, she knows that it's only a matter of time before her impulsive mouth gets herself fired. But as Liz and Daria wind up having to spend more and more time together, Liz starts to see a softer side to Daria. She's funny, thoughtful, and likes the way Liz's gender presentation varies between butch and femme. Despite the evidence that Liz can't trust her, it's hard to keep hating Daria, and even harder to resist the chemistry between them. This page-turning, sexy, and delightful, funny rom-com celebrates queer culture, chosen family, and falling in love against your better judgment.
I sort of read that,
but I forgot that this was described as a rom-com, and I have thoughts about that. Let me go ahead and read you a little bit about Camille Kellogg. And this is from straight from the back of the book, but you can catch Camille. CamilleKellogg.com. And at @Kellogg_Camille on Twitter and Instagram. So, Camille Kellogg is a queer writer based in New York City, where she works as an editor for children's and young adult books. She studied English and creative writing at Middlebury College and attended the Bread Loaf Writers Conference on a fiction scholarship. She's passionate about queer stories, cute dogs, and bad puns.
Officially, consider yourselves warned, y'all. We are setting off the spoiler alert alarm. Plug your ears, pause this video, exit to the stage left or right, whatever is most convenient, or do this first, spoil the book for yourself, and then go read it if you feel like it's like up your alley. So, why I picked this book? Honestly, Pride and Prejudice retelling. That's really all it takes for me to decide that I want to pick a book for book club. And then I realized that it was like a diverse read and had a lot of like queer representation, and there were going to be more characters of color. So I was like, all right, cool. This sounds like it'll be fun. Let's give it a spin. I don't regret the decision. It was like a quick read. It was enjoyable in like the way that I can kind of enjoy things and then criticize them if they take place in New York and like lean on that too much, because I always find it really funny. But I guess starting off with just my overall impression as someone who picked this book because it took place in the city and was gay and was Pride and Prejudice. I thought there was going to be more like Andrea's background, right? I thought there was going to be a little bit more drama. I thought there was going to be more like depth. And not to say that the book has no depth, but the depth that was brought in felt like it didn't necessarily match up with like the drama of the book. Like the challenges that are set up in the book as being the hurdles that have to be overcome didn't really necessarily feel as like dramatic as I might anticipate them to be. And I don't know how you guys felt about that. So if you want to go into like your overall impressions, and then we'll go into like questions and start picking apart things with a finer toothed comb.
I think it's hard. Okay. We've read quite a few Pride and Prejudice retellings together as a group. And I think what I'm finding is, I think it's hard. And you know, maybe a book will change my mind one day, but I think it's hard for a contemporary Pride and Prejudice retelling to have that like dramatic soulmate, you are the light of my life, I can't, you know, I'll die without you kind of drama of like the original book in a contemporary setting, you know, because most people don't walk around like making proclamations like that. And you have a phone and you can text people. And so I think for me, I don't think I've ever read a contemporary Pride and Prejudice that has like truly captured. I think for me, the closest I've gotten was the Lizzie Bennet Diaries, which wasn't a book. It was a web. And, you know, and I think it's easier with a visual maybe to like convey some of that, you know, longing in the eyes. Whereas like with a book, you know, there's no eye longing. I can't see anybody's clavicles. Like, I think it's just really hard when you're retelling that kind of story to kind of match the original. And I think for this one, she really tried to match it. We've read other retellings where it was more like inspired, you know? This one like was pretty, even though things were changed, it was pretty faithful, I think, to the sequence of events and the stage of characters and that kind of thing. And I don't know that that worked in its favor.
So I'm pretty much hearing what I'm thinking, but like from your mouths. So I don't know what else to add here particularly. I also really enjoyed this. I thought it was like a very smooth, breezy read. And I think that that was one of the reasons why it didn't like quite land on every single aspect for me. I really loved the efforts that were made to like diversify the like Bennett sisters. Like I like that they weren't sisters. They all worked together at this. Basically, I know Autostraddle is mentioned in the book, but like I pictured them working at Autostraddle. Like that's what I was picturing. I like the just like the mentions of like, you know, queer culture, queer community in the city. And I really liked the main characters' feelings of like gender identity and not feeling one way or the other way and like figuring that. I liked all of that. I think that what Drea says is true. It does follow the template of Pride and Prejudice really, really closely. I do think that that is to the book's detriment because, like, right, we've already read a couple. I will say that this one didn't make me angry, like Pride and Prejudice and Other Flavors. That book made me angry. Like, if we were going to rank them, that one would be an F tier. Oh, my gosh. I did not like that. I think it was because, like, it went, like, too hard into, like, personalities. And in this one, I felt like it was, like, too soft, you know? There's a point in... right, in Pride and Prejudice, where you like want to feel that like that angst and that yearning. And I don't think it's impossible to do it in a contemporary setting, but I just did not come through for me here. I'm also a little confused as to why it's like labeled a rom-com, because I did not find this funny at all. I at worst it's like a little bit boring. At best, it's just safe, you know. But it was perfectly enjoyable, and it definitely isn't the worst Pride and Prejudice retelling that I've read. But I don't know. There was something about it that didn't quite land. When Jishai said about, oh, it couldn't go deep, I thought that maybe it could have gone deeper, like emotionally. Like I felt like there was a lot of stuff happening, but I didn't feel like I was connecting with the characters. I didn't feel like I was connecting with the protagonist, right? Like our Lizzie stand-in. I felt like what is going on? Like I wish that they'd gone a little bit deeper into that kind of like feeling of, right, not just not feeling like they belong in like gender representation, but also like, I want to write my own things, but I have to work, so I have to keep writing this. And I felt like we didn't really lean into that. I felt like the relationships with the friends, when they have like their fallout, stuff comes up that I felt like didn't actually, I was like, wait, did I miss something? And so I wish that we had been able to be a little bit more retrospective with the main character, and in that sense go a little bit deeper, so that when she's going through it, right, with the whole like initial rejection and then that second rejection and then the whole fallout with the article, that I would have been like right there with her. And I think that I was just like being a casual observer rather than like being really invested in the story. Like I know it's going to work out, right? So like the tension is kind of like gone for me. But if I had felt anyway a little bit, just a little bit closer to the main character, I would have been like all in.
So thank you for your overall impressions. I think all of us are kind of on the same boat with this book, where I do enjoy contemporary retellings of Pride and Prejudice, because I think it's a really nice framework where you can use like an expected series of events to set people up in like new and interesting ways. And I think the problem with this one is, in my opinion, A, it relied way too much on the setting, and that was really distracting for me as a reader, because it doesn't need to be happening in like a big city. This could be happening anywhere. And I think there would honestly be more drama to it if you set it up somewhere where it isn't such a like hub of like queer culture and acceptance, because then I think that adds to like some of the drama, some of the tensions, maybe like the reasons that there are challenges in the relationships have more to do with that, and not just like, oh my god, dating in the city is so hard. It's a story that has a lot of characters, and yes, there are a lot of sisters in the original story, but you're not like following every single sister's like situation. And I think with this one, the author tried to give us a little bit for every single sibling, because every single sibling was representing like a diverse perspective. But the problem there is then you like water down how much you're able to get from like each character. So we didn't necessarily care about the main character as much as we would have if we weren't also hearing that like Lydia is like a hoe who is being a piece of shit to the kitty stand-in, who is like trying to have a podcast and is like super social media savvy, but not social media savvy enough to know that like Lydia's playing them, you know? So there's just like, there's a lot going on. And I feel like when you have this many characters you're trying to like dedicate time to, you're better off turning it into a series. You can have the exact same scenario and framework and then have there be multiple little novellas where you dedicate time to follow each character within this story, and you know then that it's like a diverse representative cast of characters and you're following them along on their individual journeys as they're trying to save this like magazine. That being said, I thought the descriptive language was great. A lot of the writing was really fun, but you know, in any case, this is a retelling, and as compared to other retellings we've read in the past, it's, you know, it doesn't necessarily compare. It's better than some, it's not as good as others. We'll see what future retellings look like and then what the Venn diagram of retellings ends up evolving into. But setting that aside, how did you guys feel about just the characters themselves, knowing that they're meant to be stand-ins for like the original Pride and Prejudice characters and like these beloved literary figures? Like, do you think that they did a good job of just like being interesting protagonists outside of the fact that it's in this framework? Because there were a lot of people. So if we're sticking to Liz and Daria for now, and if you want to bring up a secondary character, if you want to talk about Charlotte, if you want to talk about Lydia, we can.
It's like I can't find a scenario that works for me, because I feel like we've read retellings like this where it's very clear who everyone is standing in for. And then that doesn't work for me as well, because I'm so clear on who they're meant to be that like the character doesn't or can't exist by itself. But then I feel like we've read other ones where I'm like, wait, who is this supposed to be? And then that takes me out of the story too, because I'm like trying to figure out who they're meant to stand in for. So I don't know. I feel like when it deviates too much, it throws me. And when it's too faithful, it throws me. I don't know. I just wanted, like you said, I wanted more depth in the connections, not just the romantic ones, but like the friendship ones too. Like, I wanted to feel like if we had all been roommates for years and we worked at the same magazine and we were best friends, I don't know. I just feel like our dynamics would read a little bit differently, you know, like there would be so much emotional attachment. I wanted to feel the characters connecting more with each other. It, like, in the sense of like, yeah, not necessarily because that's how it was in the original, but just like in this particular scenario, if you're setting it up where like they all work with each other, they're like friends that are almost like sisters, like I wanted to feel that friendship. And then if Darcy's gonna be your boss, I wanted to feel that like forbidden love more.
So I really like the characters. Them not feeling like as close as sisters didn't quite like bother me as much. And I put this to them being from New York or being in New York and just New York people not being able to form attachments.
They don't love each other.
No, they don't love each other. New York people don't love each other. That doesn't happen in New York.
This would never happen.
No.
You would never find any circumstance where four people who all work together are able to all live together in an apartment too. I don't care how cheap the rent is. Somebody's got a family apartment that they can live in. Someone's living from New Jersey. Someone's living with their significant other. But that's what I'm saying, though.
If it's already going to be this, like, unrealistic, magical scenario, then have them fucking love each other like sisters.
Yeah. I got it.
Yeah, it didn't quite do one or the other. But
it's either, like, you're indifferent or you're, like, really good friends. Because otherwise...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah. I'm just chalking it up to them being New Yorkers and just not knowing how to like show affection for other people in the way that we maybe think that they should. But I did like that. I did enjoy each of the characters. I felt like each one had like a distinct voice. It was a little bit hard to keep track of everybody, but that's something that happens in Pride and Prejudice, period. Like, I'm like, wait, Charlotte, which one is Charlotte? Kitty, which one? Like, that happens to me all the time. If they don't have like a big ass story coming, I even fucking forget about Jane, I'll be honest. So, that really didn't really get to me. I had strange feelings about, see, now I don't even remember the names, but like Bingley's character coming in and buying the magazine and then being the boss and then hooking up immediately with Jane. That felt strange, not gonna lie. And here's the thing, like, I get it, because it's this whole thing about sapphics, right? Moving in together right away, not necessarily thinking things through, leading with your heart. You hauling, and you know the things that you can't control, like, you know, it's just those things happen, that's fine. But I felt it was very strange, I'm not gonna lie. I was like, oh, you're the owner of the magazine now, and you know, now you're dating.
Okay, I see what you're saying, but I feel like that's how the original is too, though, right? Because he like shows up and it's like, we're poor, you have to go marry him, save our family.
Yeah, but they meet at events, and then he's like interested in her, and they talk and they go on these like dates and stuff. The power dynamic exists because he is of wealth and the family is not. But here it's not just that there's money and there's no money. It's like, this is the boss. This person owns the magazine. There's no way HR would have approved them dating.
I thought that was a little strange, but you just go with it. I guess my biggest disappointment was, like, I did not, like, I wanted, like, more from Daria. I feel like, I thought that was an excellent name, by the way, because I feel like it fit not just, like, Darcy, but, like, the cartoon character Daria being very deadpan and unapproachable, honestly. However, I was just not, like, super duper convinced that either of them had done, like, enough for each other, let's be honest. For me to be like, yes, this is who these people are supposed to be. There was definitely something missing in the characterization of Liz and Daria both. And the fact that like Liz is like deeply wanting a relationship kind of threw me off as well. That threw me off a little bit as well. So it was just a lot of little things. I enjoyed the characters, but as like stand-ins for Pride and Prejudice characters, didn't necessarily fulfill the emotional requirements that I was expecting of them.
I feel like they leaned a lot into the like, we live in New York and New York is a character, and I'm like, I don't know that this is doing enough, that this is doing what you want it to be doing for the story. So I was wondering what you guys felt about the use of the setting and if you found it distracting at all, because I did.
I mean, I'm probably the wrong person to ask this because I've been in New York like 3 times my whole life and only for a handful of days at like each time, and I think 2 of those times I stayed with you, Tosh, so I didn't notice it like at all. The setting could have been anywhere to me. I didn't know, you know, I have no way of knowing. I'm like, oh sure, like. But I also admit that I don't pay as much attention to setting and world building and, you know, whatever is going on outside of the characters as other members of our book club. So I will never be distracted by the world that a book is set in, no matter what.
Having visited New York many a time, having lived there for a couple of years, I get it. I mean, Camille Kellogg is from New York. I could see what was trying to happen. I wish that, I mean, I think that it served its purpose. Pride and Prejudice is like, that story is not just about romance, but it's also about like class disparity, right? And so I think that it was cool for them to go to like, you know, the affluent parts of the city where like the magazine writers would never go to. But I also, because they all kind of lived in the same apartment working at a magazine, like, something was not connecting for me there. So I think it's a perfect setting. Like, you can tell the story anywhere, but because Pride and Prejudice is about the rich and the poor, right? New York is a great place. Big cities are a great place to like explore this like disparity, right? rich people's pride versus like poor people's pride and rich people's prejudice versus poor people's prejudice. You know what I mean? Fuck the rich, but I'm just saying people are going to people.
I appreciated the attempt at including so many side characters who were not, you know, the author's race or lived experience. I think it's hard when you have a book with so many characters, like you said, Tosh, who get so little airtime, to have those side characters feel fleshed out because you're just like not dedicating as much time to them. So I think it's hard for me to, like, it was hard for me to remember that they weren't just cis white people. And I think maybe if they had gotten more page time, it would have been different. Like, I don't think necessarily that the author described them in a way that wasn't like right or anything like that. I think it's just that she was trying to do a lot. She was trying to include a lot, and she had very little page space to do that. And unfortunately, like, you can say someone's trans, you can say someone's Black, you can say someone's Latina, but if like you don't say much other than that, then it's hard, I think, for the reader to like remember that or to see them as kind of like a fully fleshed anything. So yeah, like I think the author, you know, had like really good intentions, and I appreciate, and I know that readers appreciate it because I've seen like a bajillion reviews like shouting about how amazing it is to have such a humongous queer cast and so many different experiences of queerness on the page. Not just like racial diversity, but just so much queerness. So I know people like really like it. I think for me, it's just, it was hard to keep it all straight in my head.
That's pretty much how I feel about it too. I felt like I was reminded a lot about the different like diversity and ethnicity of the cast whenever they were angry, right? Like, I am a Black woman who owns the magazine. And I'm like, oh, right. You are. I think that I appreciate the effort, you know. I feel like because it's a huge cast, why not, you know, why not? You know what I mean? And I feel like we have been critical of like stuff like this before. I remember when we read Red, White, and Royal Blue. I'm thinking about it because the movie's coming out. And we were like, look, if you take the like the Latinx or Latinidad or whatever Hispanicness out of this, like, does that change the story at all? You know, does that mean anything in the story? And that's kind of how I feel about it here too. But I do feel like it mattered to the author. Like it truly mattered to the author. I'm not saying it didn't matter in Red, White, and Royal Blue. Something about it just didn't work for me. It didn't work for us. I remember we were really critical about that. While I did have a hard time keeping track of the characters, I felt like it was like a safe space, you know? It felt like the author was taking care as best as they could to give everyone a little bit of spotlight. Maybe not enough spotlight for to make it like truly memorable, but just it was there.
I feel like it's the kind of thing where I think in my opinion it was like, if you're trying to, if these people aren't related and if you're doing found family and if you want representation, then like why can't Daria be Black? Why can't Daria be Latina? You had your three main, like, except for Jane, everybody else was like white in the romance of it all. Lydia was white, Liz was white, Daria was white. So, like, the conflict all happened with...
Okay, I will say, I do understand why she didn't, though, because she works in publishing, like Camille does. Mm-hmm. And she knows how much of a debate, like, the whole own voices is. So I don't think she would write a main character who was not her race. Because she's someone who works in publishing, and she sees that from the publishing side all the time, I don't think she would... I think... That's why the main characters were white and it was only side characters, because it's like, you know, that way you avoid the criticism of like you're writing from the perspective of something that you don't have experience in.
Appreciate your insight, because I know there's definitely people in the audience who don't know that there's a lot more politics going on the back end when it's putting books out. What else do I have? I think we already kind of talked about the chemistry between them, where it was like, yeah, the chemistry was there, but I don't know that the buildup really did the job. Like, they kind of were enemies, but then they went for drinks. Like,
I will say, I know everybody was talking about how sexy that scene was in the kitchen. I have never been able to get into a scene where they're in someone else's house. Like, that's just me personally, like my anxiety. I could never have sex in with someone right next to like where their aunt or their mom, or I feel like we see this in books often, you know, like they're visiting a relative, and that's just a me personal thing. But that's just like on top of it, the one like super sexy scene, I was like, I couldn't get into it because I was like, ah, la viejita's gonna walk in on them.
You know, Doreen like, got a nice apartment. Why couldn't this happen in her like Upper East Side apartment?
I couldn't relax. I couldn't enjoy it.
I was like in la cocina.
I was surprised that, I mean, I don't know why I was surprised, but I was surprised they fucked. Like, I was like, oh, this is happening now. I think because it just felt like, it felt like way too soon in their like trajectory as a couple.
Maybe we do have things in common.
Yeah. And then she like eats her out in the kitchen. It's fine. But I was like, I remember reading. Okay, so when
you were thinking it was gonna be like a makeout, and then it was like so much.
Yes, exactly. And then I was disappointed when they hooked up. When did they hook up in the office? Or did they kiss in the office?
They kissed.
So I wish that it had been reversed almost, because I think that
that's what I said earlier, right? Yeah. Like lean into the forbidden office thing.
I wish that it had been reversed. I feel like the whiplash of Daria not not engaging with Liz after that. You ustedes saben como yo soy.
Immediately after that, they don't even have their pants on.
Yeah, si alguien me llega a hacer eso a mí, olvídate que yo no, esa persona no me va a ver a mí en la vida. Forget it. You're not going to see me again. You're not going to talk to me again. Are you fucking kidding me? Are you kidding? So I feel like it was a lot to happen, like a primera, like at first. So I wish it had been reversed. I wish it had been, because the office is where they meet and they have like that first moment of contention, right? That's where they become enemies. They hear each other. They hear each other talking shit. And that's like their daily battleground. And in the aunt's house, it's just so weird. Like, I agree. I mean, I probably could fuck in a kitchen. I don't care whose kitchen it is. But like, it did feel strange that I just got here. And not enough has happened between y'all for you to be like, I don't know. Maybe it's a me thing. I mean, they were hot for each other, but no, I did think that it was much. It was a little bit much for me as part of like where they were in the story.
And they had a 7-course dinner. That shit's filling.
They did eat a lot.
Watch me. Yeah. I'm digesting.
And they were like drunk too, right? So like.
No.
Yeah, because then basically after Daria stops talking to Liz because she freaks out, then they have to keep working together, and it's just weird. And then when they make out, then just I am just like disappointed. You know what I mean? Like, I'm disappointed in Liz because I'm like, how could you talk to someone? How could you let someone kiss you after they did that to you? You got a bigger heart than me, but
I will say.
Cristina no hubiese ni mandado el email. You would have left there and blocked it.
I will say, and I think this was part of like the character development for Liz. I found Liz to be so just like desperate, and it made it like hard because she's so desperate to talk to Weston and texting and double thinking. And I'm like, how old are you? Because I would understand it if you were like young, but you're adult who's had relationships, like you live in the city, you see how relationships are. But the way she was like so desperate to find anybody at the bar, and then with Weston pichandole, and they're like, I'm just gonna text back, I'm just gonna text again, oh maybe they'll like,
it felt very Lydia to me. No, not Lydia, it felt very Charlotte to me. Like, I was like, why are we engaging in this kind of behavior? Liz is not supposed to care about this shit.
She's not supposed to care. She's not supposed to want to get married. She's not supposed to give a shit about any of this. She's just supposed to be trying to be there to like support her siblings.
She's just the pride.
That's
supposed to be
there
the
was
pride.
No, there was no pride. There was
there
literally
was
no pride.
Pride.
Just there the was prejudice. No pride.
There was like some prejudice. There was a good amount of prejudice on both sides, but Daria was proud. Daria was also traumatized. Daria had like family trauma going on. But Liz is just like, anybody,
Will anybody love me? Anybody? I'll change myself however you need to be whatever kind of partner you think is interesting. Like,
wait, girl. Did I tell this to you, Drea? Did I'm like Pride and Prejudice y Sobraera? I was like, este libro se tiene que llamar Pride and Prejudice y Sobraera. I was like, how is it that Liz is like so like desperate for love? Like, I don't understand this. I mean, it's just weird. It was just weird. I wish that it had been like, oh, my heart's been broken, so I'm not going to look for anybody anymore. Like, I don't care.
Yeah. And then maybe if like the kitty character is the one who is like, I just have had so many failed relationships, but I love Lydia. And I know Lydia, like, I know they are complicated, but if I could just get their attention enough, then like maybe they'll love me. It would make more sense to have that attitude in like that side character versus having a main character who's just like,
yeah,
la primera que la mire.
I still enjoyed it despite all of that, but I do wish that they hadn't fucked in the kitchen for different reasons. I wish that they'd fucked in the office, or that they just had like two really hot, passionate make out grind over your clothes sessions. Speaking of like desperate or whatever, I did not love that they like reconnected over running.
No.
Okay, hear me out. It felt too much. Like I got there and I was like, great. Now she's gonna literally chase after her. Like, she's going to run.
If you're gonna make it a sport among the queer community in New York, indoor rock climbing, bouldering. Nobody goes running except for people who use cocaine regularly. Do you also feel like things kind of went nuclear with Lydia? Because they were fine, and then suddenly they are fucking Weston and stealing articles and publishing it and telling everyone to fuck off. And it felt very, one of these characters has to get sacrificed to move the plot along. We're going to make it be Lydia.
Okay, I didn't think it was like too, okay, because originally she's the one who wanted to hook up with Weston, like at the bar. And then Liz kind of stole Weston. Stole entre comillas. Like, Lydia saw Weston first. And then Liz was like,
Lydia estaba con el kitty character. I thought they were just talking to a new person.
They like made a joke about it. So yeah, it like didn't really seem like anything. But then later I was like, oh, right. Like, they did think Weston was hot at the bar.
Yeah, yeah.
I definitely know a lot of people who are like, if you're broken up, it's fair game. So I more so just saw it as like,
no loyalty.
No, just like the hooking up with Weston was like, they were looking at the same event with like two completely different perspectives. You know, like, there was no like ill intent or like malice. It was like one of them just happened to think that that was off limits, and the other one thought like, no, it's fine, you know, like, this is a thing people can do if like you're already broken up. So they were just like coming at it from different perspectives. But then because they got mad at each other, it just kept like building and building and building and building. Like, to me, it made sense. And like, you know how sometimes people fight over like a stupid thing, and then all of a sudden you end up becoming mortal enemies because you just can't ever come to like a consensus. Like, that's what I saw, what I thought happened there. Like, I don't think the fights, I don't think it was like Lydia out to ruin Liz's life. I think it was just like, Lydia was like, ah, okay, bien, they like stopped hooking up. Maybe I'll hook up with this person. Oh yeah, cool. That was a fun time. Why are you so pissed at me? And then Liz is like, because you're a fucking terrible person. And then the Lydia character is like, wait a minute, I'm not a, you're a fucking terrible person.
I think if it had been framed differently from the onset and not, it's four best friends living together and all the best friends love each other, you at least give the person a courtesy text. Like, hey,
yeah.
Weston's here. You're cool with this, right?
No, listen, the only reason when I was in college, I had a best friend. Like, we were not dorm mates, but we lived like, we had like the rooms next to each other. We were like a group of four, you know, we like went everywhere together. We had some of the same classes. We ate meals, you know, together. Like, we were really close. And I broke up with someone, and like 2 weeks later, they were dating the person. And they truly did not think because we were broken up. And I mean, of course, me being me, I'm like, hey, it's fine, you know, but like, I don't want to cause any conflict, but like, it wasn't fine. So I can totally, that's what I'm saying. Like, I know she didn't do it with ill intent. She just genuinely thought like, they were never that serious. Like, they broke up. It's fine.
I can see the two sides of the situation, because I think everybody in that apartment knew how desperate for love Liz was. So if out of everyone in that apartment, you're going to hook up with someone's like even casual hookup ex and it's Liz, it's like.
Yeah. No, I don't think any of us would do it to each other. You know what I mean? Like, we wouldn't.
I wouldn't agree with that, because I'm like,
these are New York people.
I once again will chalk it up to people in New York just not knowing how to act.
Okay, you know what? Thinking back to my lived experiences, yeah, someone would hook up with someone else's person who they were into and not give a shit.
I just want to know, we don't have to get deep into it, the article that was published that by accident. I felt crazy for thinking it was being blown up way out of proportion. I was like, this doesn't sound like it's as big of a deal as this book is trying to make it sound. I also think because Liz was kind of already mentally checked out, I feel like she would have been like, yeah, fuck you. Like, if someone had let me fuck them in a kitchen and never spoken to me, and then an article came out where I was shit talking them, I'd be like, well, my job here is done. I mean, I wouldn't have wanted that to be my legacy, but there's pseudonyms, there's pen names, you know? That's all I'm saying.
I think the only reason it was a big deal is because it talked about the owner fucking an employee. And you know why that's a big deal? Because you have an HR office that you're supposed to report to if you're having a relationship. Every year, I sign a document with my company and I have to tell them if I'm in a relationship. And every year, I say, Ivan and I are dating. We've been dating for this amount of time. And every year someone reaches out to me and they're like, did you disclose your relationship? And I'm like, before I got hired. Yes. Cause they don't want to get sued.
Yeah. I literally thought it was just about covering their butts.
I did think it was like stupid though. At that point, the company's closed and be like, sorry, Liz, you're fired. Yeah. So this would be, she didn't even want to be in the company in the first place. I agree with you. Though.
I'm glad it wasn't just me. I was just like, it just feels like too little too late at this point. And because I was feeling a type of way about Daria, I was like, fuck that bitch. Fuck her. Let her sink.
I will say though, like, I much preferred that to be the thing than like the original Wickham plot.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'll take it.
I was happy that was not, I did like that remixing that like Wickham, once the Wickham thing happened, it was out of the picture and it became just like a Liz's integrity kind of thing. But I mean, I don't know. Maybe it was just at the point of the book where I was like, I don't care.
All right. My last note was, what kind of literary magazine or queer bar would y'all try to create if you had the money, the time, and the opportunity?
Oh, shit. I need to, hold on. Let me think.
You should know this was coming.
You were
in the chat. You were like, are you going to ask this question? I'm like, yeah,
I
guess so, sure.
I feel like I should have prepared, but I didn't. Give me a moment. Do you have an idea already? You can start.
No, okay, I don't have an idea of a magazine or bar but I do have an idea for what the bar in the story should have been called.
Ooh,
go for it.
Like Pride and Jew. So it's like a Pride and Prejudice. That's what she should have called it. Pride because it's gay, and then you as in Pride and you, like, but Pride.
Wow.
And
Prejudice. Okay. I see it now.
I'm like, is it a Jewish bar?
Yeah. Audience, it was Pride ampersand JU.
Copywriter. All of my things would be misinterpreted.
Me muero.
Okay, I will say I would never write for a magazine. I don't think I'm great at like constantly having to think of short form kind of pieces. Like, I wouldn't want that job. I don't think I would want to work in any category of that. But I would be into maybe like running the social media posts or, you know, doing something like that. But I don't think I would want to be a writer at a magazine, queer or otherwise.
I would love to work at Autostraddle. I feel like that'd be right up my alley.
Put it out there. Put it out there.
Exacto.
I can write listicles for days.
I would. My thing would be like really niche. Both the bar and the magazine would have the same theme. So if I had to pick one or the other, it would be like gay and geeky stuff, right? Like the bar would be like hot, big lesbian orc themed, you know, just like a hot tavern for gay nerds to go hang out in. Oh, yeah. And then a magazine that would talk about like, right, queer nerdy community. Or queer blurty community. That's what I would like. I think that would be really, really fun. I think that I want something to be catered specifically for them, like thirsty sword lesbians type. You know what I mean? Like there's no confusing who this is for.
Okay. My lesbian / queer bar is called Come Say Hi. And it's because it's a THC infused.
I would have like one of those arcade bars.
A barcade?
Yeah, I would have a barcade, but instead of it being like the old timey like machines you always see at those things, it's like the things they have at GameStop, you know, where they have like Nintendo Switches connected to like a TV monitor and people can like come test out games. So it would be like that kind of barcade. It would be like, we have PlayStation, we got Xboxes, we got Nintendos, and you could come like play with your friends and you could like rent a room. And then we would serve like mocktails and stuff, you know, so like, you know, like those karaoke bars, it would be like that. But like you could rent a room and just get shit faced drunk and game with your friends like all night and like make a mess, like not in your house. I feel like there could be a market for that.
Yeah.
You know how like places have like speed dating nights? You could have like speed dating nights with like the dating sim games and you could just.
Oh my god.
You can play the dating sims with each other and then maybe you leave with someone in real life. Maybe.
I think that'd be such a good idea because you could also pair people up in two player games and like see how they mm-hmm. you play with a stranger while like getting to know them. That's a cool idea.
Who wants to be my investor?
Bueno, si ganó la lotería.
Nada.
So
I feel like we could incorporate all of these bars into one bar.
Well, that's one that's mega bar.
Yeah, one mega bar. It was a conversation for another day.
So final thoughts. I thought this was like a nice light read. I would recommend it to people who want to like, you know, get a taste of representation and have a little bit of spice and you know, I did a lot of like analyzing of the story and stuff, but that's just for the purposes of this. As a read, I'd recommend it.
I'd recommend it too. We focus on a couple of things, but it was just like critical of like certain things as a package, it's perfectly all right. I feel like they're valid critiques, don't get me wrong. I just feel like those are the things that I think stood out to us the most. And we are looking for specific things when we're reading romance. And, you know, when you have like the Venn diagram of like queer, Pride and Prejudice, contemporary romance, rom-com in New York, then that's a lot of boxes to tick across the board for all of us. And I think it's like just valid to just kind of take a look at all those three pieces individually and see if they work together. They didn't perfectly mesh up, but I still think it's a solid read. And I would also read more from Camille Kellogg.
Their next book is a Notting Hill book, by the way. How much I enjoyed or didn't enjoy this book, I really don't think it's on Camille Kellogg. I think it's just I've read so many Pride and Prejudice retellings at this point that it's hard to separate that. I don't know. I just it's hard for me to like judge the characters separate from the Pride and Prejudice, and it's hard to not compare to other Pride and Prejudice retellings. And you know what I mean? It just makes it hard for me to enjoy the book as like a completely separate, you know, standalone like story, because there's like so much connected to it. That's why like I would read something else by Camille Kellogg. Like I don't think this was necessarily the book for me, but I would definitely check out her other work, because again, I don't think that was as much Camille Kellogg as a writer as much as it was just like it being a Pride and Prejudice retelling.
Don't know if there's anything else that you guys are reading that you might want to talk about. I just finished the Jessica Simpson autobiography that she published in, I think, 2020. That girl's been through some shit. and I have a different Princess Diaries book that I've borrowed, and I still have Tomorrow to read. So those are my current things that I'm reading.
Dre and I were reading for Hay Libros en la Casa. This book by Dani Trujillo. It is Lizards Hold the Sun, and it is a contemporary indigenous archaeology romance.
I just started Plantains and Our Becoming, which is a poetry collection. I'm going to share the cover here because it's beautiful. I think you should all see it. But it's by a Dominican author who grew up in the States, but then moved to the Dominican Republic, like, as an adult. I used to follow her, like, on Instagram, like, before she became, like, before she got, like, her big book deal, because I found it so interesting. Like, she just wanted to, like, connect. She still had a lot of family in the Dominican Republic, so she, like, moved in with her grandfather in, like, the middle of El Campo, you know, in the DR, and just really wanted to, like, go back to that whole, like, Afro-Dominican, like, culture. And, like, I think she lived in Haiti for a while too. She had family. So anyway, it's just, you know, it's a poetry collection about being Black and Latina, and specifically from the Caribbean and stuff. So I've only just started it, but I really like it. I'm excited to see. I've read some stuff she's, like, put online before, and I've been a fan. So I'm excited that now she's getting kind of, like, traditional, like, book deals. Like, I'm excited to follow her career. I feel like I've been here since the before, you know? but anyway, it comes out next month. So I'm reading an ARC that I got from NetGalley. But yeah, exciting. I like reading poetry collections every so often. Every time I read one, I'm like, oh, I should read, like, more poetry collections. But yeah, I don't know if you clicked on the link, but it is a very beautiful cover.
What are we reading next, y'all? I don't remember.
We're reading my book. It's my YA pick for the year. I think we all picked one YA this year, I think, right? Or two, or I don't know. I picked one. So this is, like, my one YA of the year, and it's I'm Not Supposed to Be in the Dark, which also has a beautiful cover. And that's literally the number one reason I picked it. But it's a paranormal YA with a ghost. I've been wanting to read a ghost romance ever since Tashai told us about that ghost romance she read,
right, from the mom recommended. The Mother's Day books. Yeah, yes,
the Mother's Day episode. I have legit wanted to read a ghost romance since then. And obviously this one won't be as sexy because it's a YA, but I'm very excited for this ghost romance.
That's it, internet. That is a wrap on Just As You Are, the queer retelling of Pride and Prejudice. I hope you guys had a nice time. We had a nice time too. Doesn't matter how much we do or don't enjoy a read, it's always a nice time to read it together and talk about it afterwards. So looking forward to the next time that we're going to get together and talk about Andrea's ghost romance, which I'm also very excited about. So hugs, kisses, love, 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 and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for making it to the end of our episode. Make sure to like the video and leave us a comment. If you're listening, don't forget to leave us a review. You can support Only Lovers Book Club by subscribing to our shows and sharing our episodes. You can also drop some change into our tip jar or buy books from our bookshop. We've got it all. We've got a ton of Pride and Prejudice retellings in there. Let me tell you, you won't get sick of them. Or if you are, then I guess you will. Find us on Instagram at Only Lovers Book Club, and then we'll see you next time. Bye.